here's the million-dollar question, and I'm serious about this.
Buccaneers fans, welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee D. Kemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. They present all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com, including this podcast. Get to BillCurryFord.com. BillCurryFord.com. Curry is the family name since 1960, a family-owned dealership serving Tampa in so many ways, not just with top-flight vehicles and service and body care, not your personal body, your car's body. They help out so many Tampa Bay charities and are so active in the community. BillCurryFord.com. We actually are hoping to announce a watch event with Bill Curry Ford for the Giants game coming up. So stay tuned for that. Check out the website. But in the meantime, if you need a vehicle, Bill Curry Ford gives you top dollar for your trade-in. They've got used inventory. They've got transparent pricing. And they have got Sean Sullivan, the general manager, who will assist you personally. You can reach out to him through the website and ask him a question like he's your cousin in the car business. He loves to talk Bucks. He's our JoeBucksFan.com draft guru. He has the Ira Kaufman discount for you. Ask for it. Say, Sean, I'm looking at a vehicle. What's my Ira Kaufman discount? Don't be foolish. You got to speak up. A lot of people don't like to speak up. Speak up. Sean wants to hear it. And they've got all kinds of offers on their website. More coming. Promotions from Ford and other things. So get there. Keep shopping there if you're looking hard. BillCurryFord.com. And we've got a lot of fun on the podcast today. Sage is still in a unique situation he doesn't want to talk about until we can sit down in person. So we're going to wait on that. Anyway, keep that in mind. And we appreciate all of our listeners who are subscribing to the podcast. You can do that at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Addict, so many more. We've got thousands and thousands of subscribers across many platforms. We appreciate the loyal audience, and we appreciate the new listeners, which are always coming on board. And thank you to JP Peterson, who is a longtime Tampa Bay media guy. He recently was just doing a little discussion about some changes at WDAE Radio, where he used to work, and he noted that, hey, radio is not what it used to be. I listened to the Ira Kaufman podcast, so thank you for the shout-out, JP, and thanks to the tremendous loyalty to JoeBucksFan.com from the readers. It's amazing that we dominate at all times, and you know, it's not as fun as it used to be when we were scratching and clawing to get to the top, but we do appreciate being where we are right now. Now, before we get to the sage, you have to know about Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration, get that name burned into your head, because that is exactly who you call when you have a disaster in your home that threatens the life of your property. So not if you spill a gallon of milk, but if you have a flood that you discover under your counter that you think maybe, gosh, this could have been here for 3 days already, or you find mold, or you've got storm damage, fire, whatever it is, call Florida's Elite Restoration. They are the experts. They serve the whole Tampa Bay area. They go across the state as well. And they're family owned. Owner Josh Martin has $500 back for you if when you first call, you mention, hey, I heard about you guys through Ira Kaufman or through JoeBucksFan.com. After your free evaluation at your property, could be a business property too. Then if you need their services, if you want them to fight with your insurance company for you on your behalf, or just do the work and repair it and do full restoration, you get $500 back. That's either cash back or money for your deductible. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Don't mess around. Put them in your disaster plan. Do your homework now. See how amazing they are, and then you're ready. All right, let's jump right in with the sage here. All right, Ira, we are here. 4-5, 49ers coming in off a bye week. You know, people are talking about how it's a must-win game for the Bucs, break a losing streak, blah, 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 but I don't really hear a lot of people talking about how this game has massive, massive wild card implications. If the Bucs can win this game, Ira, they own the tiebreaker on the 49ers, and the 49ers have a much tougher schedule than the Bucs ahead. And if they don't win the NFC West, you know, the Bucs will probably have a good chance to, you know, win that tiebreaker if it came down to it. That's a big element for me, and hopefully the team is aware of it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Steve. When I had my sit down a week ago with Kevin Ross, one of the things that Ross emphasized, and I thought it was kind of funny, because I sat with him leave. It was going into the Chiefs game, and Russ didn't talk about the Chiefs game, Lee. He was talking about the 49er game in this regard, and they must be talking about this at headquarters. He said, if we win that game, we got the tiebreaker over the Commanders and the Lions and the Eagles and the 49ers. So I think that's kind of their focus. I think they kind of know that the division is almost out of grasp, almost, unless the Falcons collapse, which they're capable of doing, Lee. But Ross was looking at the 49ers game as being a big one in terms of a tie break. Lee, I don't know about you. I'm not ready to call this a must win. Lee, I know it sounds crazy. What, do you want to drop to 4-6 with four straight losses? I understand that. I don't think it would be the knockout blow. Not the knockout blow. Now, 5-5 certainly sounds a lot better. Ease your mind going into the bye. Lee, I think it's a little bit of a stretch to call this a must win and to suggest the season's over if they lose.
I'm more pessimistic than you two. I know you two guys are banking on, oh, this is going to be a simple schedule after the bye. They're going to run the table. Maybe they'll lose one game. Man, I just don't see it because I don't think the Bucs are playing to a level where you can bet a nickel if they're going to win four games in a row, much less whatever the rest of the schedule is. You know, for example, who among us thought they were going to beat or they were not going to beat the Broncos? We thought that was like a cakewalk. The Broncos kicked them right in their teeth. And who among us thought that the Bucs wouldn't even get a split with the Falcons? Well, that didn't happen because their defense collapsed. You know, they got a lot to improve for me to bank on them winning four games in a row, much less running the table. I'm sorry. I want to be positive, but the Bucs have to give me a reason to be positive, and I'm just not there yet.
Steve, the only thing that gives me a little bit of confidence that they could go 6-1 close by, and I'm with Lee. There's not a lot of games where you say that's a guaranteed victory, unless maybe Carolina, Steve. But anyway, they did it last year, Steve, with a lot of the same players, same quarterback, same head coach. They did it. They lost 6 out of 7. People forget that. They were 4-7. They were on the balls of their ass, Steve. and nobody expected a big, 5 out of 6 at that point. And the schedule is probably on paper even a little tougher than the one that's coming up in December. Steve, the fact they did it last year gives me a little bit of comfort.
And I don't look at it from the Bucs perspective. I just try to look at it objectively. They're scoring points, and like the Giants after the bye. The Giants are the 32nd ranked team in scoring in the league. And I watch most of these games, literally, on the condensed games. I don't watch a lot of college football. It's hard for me to get through a Giants game. That's how bad it is. Like, it's hard. Like, it feels like work. They don't score. They're averaging 15 a game, and the Panthers, the Bucs have twice. They're terrible. And the Saints, we know that situation. So that's four teams right there that will be favored by more than a touchdown, I'm sure. That's 8 wins, and then you still have crappy teams like the Raiders, and Dallas is going to be playing for the draft with no quarterback. I'm looking at it more from the other teams.
You understand Lee's point, though, Steve, right? You understand
it. 100%. Lee's point is, hey, for the Bucs to win, they got to play some defense, and they're not playing any defense, which is true. But against the teams that they've got lined up here, some of them, they really aren't going to have to play defense. They're just going to have to do what they've been doing. So I don't know. Hopefully that changes. Hopefully they can show up. But over the last 3 games, guys, the Bucs are averaging 77% completion rate by opponents. And in comes Brock Purdy, who's known for his accuracy.
Lee, do you think there's a chance that during the bye week, and they self-scout and they do this and do that, and of course they lament the fact that they didn't add a player that'll be part of bye week? Why didn't we pick this guy up or that guy? Well, you think there's a chance maybe Jamel Dean comes back and maybe Bowles thinks about it, maybe with a little spurring on from the front office, maybe even the Glazers, that he makes a substantive change, Lee, on the other side of the ball in terms of scheme or who he's starting? Do you think he could make an in-house move that could be significant?
Well, I was going to sort of ask that question to Casey Rogers, but luckily he didn't open the door for that. But I swear to you, Ira, this week when I was listening to him talk, I was, 5 feet from him. If he would have mentioned the word communication again, I would have said, Coach, here it is, November. You're talking about communications. This should have been done first week of training camp. Do you guys just need to go back to the drawing board and start from scratch? because whatever you're coaching, it isn't working. It isn't working. You got to use the excuse of communication. Something's not getting through, so maybe you got to start over. So I was sort of thinking what you're thinking, Ira, that, you know, something drastic has to change here. Rodgers didn't give me that opening, but I was waiting. I was waiting for it, and I felt bad about it because I liked the guy. I didn't want to embarrass him. But had he used that stupid word, communication, I was ready to go.
None of us want to hear that phrase anymore because that's an all-encompassing phrase when you got nothing else to say.
Yeah, look, the communication doesn't have much to do with no edge rush, you know, and that's a big part of the problem. So, you know, that's the same old story, but that we've got a good team coming in here, Ira. Now, this week, good news, I guess, the Bucks just had two walkthroughs on Wednesday and Thursday, so they don't even count as practices. And if you're hurt, you're allowed to participate because it's not a real practice. So there was some confusion about Baker Mayfield, but when they did have a real practice today, he was out there, his toe, whatever his toe issue is fine, no big deal. And they're getting a little healthier. 100% ruled out is only Mike Evans, and he's been working with trainers, and there's been no announcement that he's had a setback or anything, or no rumbling about that. And so maybe that's why they didn't make a move at the trade deadline. I'll try to be positive for a receiver. Maybe that's one of the reasons. But of course, you know, they've been getting production. But Sage, Todd Bowles, not a good record against Kyle Shanahan, and Lee documented that. And the Bucks, I looked it up, Ira, under Todd Bowles, they are 1-5 in short week games. So after a Monday night or on a Thursday night, the Bucks are 1-5 with Todd Bowles. Is that a coincidence here? And what do you think of the Shanahan-Bowles situation?
Shanahan's on the short list of better coaches in this league. I would put him top 10. I would take Sean McVay over him, but not that many more. He's very crafty. He's very innovative. Lee, one thing I noticed about the 49ers, this goes back 3 or 4 years now, especially this year. Lee, it seems like whoever's in the backfield carrying the ball, they're all good. They're all productive. Tells you the line's really good and the scheme's really good. That's what it tells you. Their offense has been fine this year. For some reason, Lee, I think they underachieve a little on that defense. I think they should be a little bit better on that side of the ball. They got Fred Warner, could be the best linebacker in football. Bose is the top 5 edge rusher. You know, they got a decent secondary. I think the Bucs can move the ball against the 49ers. Lee, I don't think that side of the ball is going to be the problem.
Aren't they missing a really good tackle? Is it Hargrave or Hargrove?
Yeah.
Guy got hurt like the second week of the year, third week of the year.
Javon Hargrave, yeah.
Now, this is something I always bring him up because I always listen to him. And I don't know the figures, but Mike Lombardi always, I mean, he loves Shanahan, but he always harps about Shanahan rarely is able to come back in a game if he's losing in a fourth quarter. He's something like 3-20, some ridiculous record. If a team has a touchdown lead on them in the fourth quarter, they never come back.
I didn't realize that one. Lee, 5-5 sounds a lot better than 4-6. Lee, if they lose and they're in a death spiral, you know, potentially, do you think they can get their act together down the stretch? The fact they did it last year, Lee, does that give you any more confidence?
It gives me a little bit of confidence, but you're banking on an outlier, I think. And I don't like to bank on outliers. Just because someone did something rare once doesn't mean that they can automatically do something rare again the next year. I'm leery about, they did it last year, they'll do it this year. You know, the line, Ira, is San Francisco giving 6.5. So the Bucks are getting 6.5.
Boy, that's not a lot of respect for the home team, Lee. It's not. These are not your normal 49ers. It's not like they're coming in, 7-2. The Bucks playing at home. I don't know. Didn't they watch the Kansas City game, Lee? I mean, the Bucks were really competitive.
Well, and Steve has brought this up a couple times before. I think this is the Todd Bowles effect. You know, Bucks fans are at best on the fence about Bowles. And there's various reasons. We've gone over it before. But Todd Bowles in the national media just doesn't exude confidence. People are leery of Todd Bowles. You know, his time with the Jets is embedded in people's heads. And 2 years with the Bucks, he's been a 500-ish coach. And so people, and Mayfield as well, people aren't overly sold on Mayfield. You know, the memories of Cleveland and the stinking Panthers are branded in their brains. That's got an element to it. You know, obviously we know that the point spreads, even though they are set by Vegas, they move depending on money. And I think this is also clear that not just bettors, but people nationwide, they're not believers in the Bucks. That's also why you saw so many people before the season thinking the Bucks were like a 6-win team, a 7-win team, what have you. Same thing.
Steve, you heard Mayfield and Kuhn this week react to whether they were okay with the decision to kick the extra point. I'll start it off here, Steve, right here and now. I don't believe anything Mayfield and Kuhn said at that podium on that subject. Zero. I think behind the scenes, Lee, and you know I'm right about this, I think if it was their decision, it would have been a different decision. But they're not going to say that in front of the cameras, Lee. They're not.
Oh, you're completely correct, Ira. Completely correct. Yep. And just to throw a little bit more intrigue into this, Ira, I know you said you couldn't watch Thursday night's game where you were at. Late in the game, the Bengals came within 1 point. And what was there, Steve, 15 seconds left, 20 seconds left? And Cincinnati went for two, didn't get it.
Two things with that, Sage. Gerald McCoy did an interview out in San Francisco. He was adamant the Bucks should have gone for it. So for whatever that's worth, the player's opinion, and he laid out the same kind of reasons that that we did, which was, hey, you know, this is Patrick Mahomes on the road. You got a little momentum. Go for it. If you don't get it, so what? You know? Part two would be, if you watch the video, I thought it was very interesting. Baker Mayfield mic'd up. It's on YouTube, on the Buccaneers YouTube page. As you've seen them before, Ira, it's a cut up of his commentary during the game. Fun stuff, you know, just grunting on the field, all kinds of little one-liners. Well, you know what? There was no comment after the touchdown. It was all edited. After the Bucs scored a touchdown, you don't hear a thing until Mayfield goes out to get the coin toss. And then they edited the coin toss. You didn't see any comment from him after the coin toss, or even another angle of his angst when he lost the coin toss. So my feeling is something was said on that audio that the Bucks didn't want heard.
I think you're 1,000% correct, Lee. They wiped it clean, Lee. They wiped it clean. And so we'll never know. Now, Lee, here's the million-dollar question. And I'm serious about this. Could something like the two-point decision and how it ultimately turned out, you know, getting on that plane, playing your ass off and getting on a plane and you're lost, now you got to fly back. Lee, could that kind of thing linger?
Yes.
Could that kind of thing linger a little bit in the locker room? I'm not going to say players aren't going to play hard. I'm not going to say that. But you know what I'm getting to, Lee.
Oh, absolutely. And I totally agree with you, Ira. I very much think so. You know, football players are human beings, too. And they've got more skin in the game than we do. And most, I don't know about most, but many Bucks fans are just outraged by that. Many objective observers. Adam Schein went crazy about that on his show. Chris Russo mentioned it on his show. It was a very popular topic among the national football shows on TV, the hollering shows. So, yeah, if we're that way, imagine what the Bucks are. They're the ones that are busting their tail every day, you know, practicing, working out, pumping weights. They're the ones out there getting beat to hell, sweating, you know, out on the grass on Monday night. I guarantee you that lingers. Now, I also agree with you, Ira, and I want to make this point of emphasis as well as you did. That doesn't mean they're throwing in the towel in the season. That doesn't mean they're going to quit against the 49ers. That doesn't mean they're the Bears. I guess you saw Odunze. Not Odunze, but DJ Moore walked off the field during a play. He was so fed up last week with the Bears. They're not going to do that. But it lingers. Absolutely, it lingers.
Hey, Ira, on the lingering front, I'm going to take a positive spin on the lingering front. I think it could linger from the standpoint of the defense getting together or realizing, you know what, the head coach just put the game in our hands and we let him down. And he's taken crap all over the country for it. We couldn't get a stop. And maybe that lingers in a positive way. Maybe they're able to rally behind that. Maybe it becomes a positive thing. I think Mayfield is wired to the degree that he can shake it off. And the offense is feeling good about how it's playing. You got more guys playing, you know, guys playing who were on the bench earlier. They're all fired up about getting their minutes, and I'm not worried about it.
Lee, far from me to name this guy as a savior. I mean, that would be absurd and ridiculous. Jamel Dean, who I look at as a, you know, kind of an average corner. I don't want to rip the guy, but, you know, he never picks off a ball. You know, Kevin Ross has been on him all for 3 years now. Catch the balls you can catch. He doesn't do it, Lee. Sometimes he's nowhere near the ball, but, you know, Lee, he's going to be better than Josh Hayden.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're playing the Niners. They don't have Ayuk, but they still got some weapons there. Can Dean's presence make a difference post-bye?
You said it. You said it. Jamel Dean being healthy means Josh Hayes is not on the field. That's all needs to be said.
That's all needs to be said.
Josh Hayes is not on the field. And I know some people are just going, just losing their wigs over Josh Hayes. I'm like, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, the guy shouldn't be on there, but he's not a starter. Guys are hurt. You know, if you want to argue, maybe the Bucs should have went out and got somebody. I have a sympathetic ear to that, but, you know, the Bucs have fallen in love with their own players, and I guess they'll get divorced or live happily thereafter with their own players.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Hayes, he's been awful and, you know, overmatched in a lot of ways. He is literally, though, the third backup. You had Bryce Hall got hurt in week one, veteran backup that they signed in free agency. Then they put Funderburk out there, who was okay, and then he fell apart. And now we've got Hayes. You know, that's not good.
I'd actually welcome them playing Izian or Tyke Smith at corner over Hayes. Really, I would.
Well, we got a big game coming up, Stevie. How do you look at it?
You want me to pick first, Ira? You want to pick first? What do you think?
We're going to go with Lee first today.
Lee first? All right. And then let me say this first, and then I got one Bruce Arians for you that I haven't written about yet. Got to get your take on it. Jamel Dean, proud, a very proud Bill Curry Ford customer, BillCurryFord.com. You go to the showroom, maybe you'll see Jamel Dean. He's been known to be down there getting an oil change, that kind of stuff. BillCurryFord.com, as we heard from before. And, of course, as always, we thank our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to their website. Check out their reviews on Google. Fantastic. They are your go-to whenever you have a disaster at your property, fire, flood, mold, water damage, whatever it is, call them first before you call your insurance company. All right, Lee, you've been called upon by Ira to give your pick for this game.
Kyle Shanahan, especially with the 49ers, but Kyle Shanahan's history with Todd Bowles is not good from a Todd Bowles perspective. Shanahan's offenses average over 30 points against Bowles. So I'm just going to go by the averages here. I would say 49ers 31, Bucks 24.
Steve, I'll go up and say I haven't done very well picking these Buck games. I got last week's right, but that was no great pick. Steve, I think the Bucks are going to lay an egg Sunday. I do. I think last week's game is going to linger on the short week. The bye week can't come soon enough. I'm going to say 30-17, 49ers.
All right, Sage. You know, the 49ers have been inconsistent, and I can't just pretend that they haven't, but the Bucks have been as well. And you know what? I think at some point the loss of talent is going to catch up to them, as much as I love what Liam Cohen's doing. I don't like this matchup at all in a lot of ways. So I'm going to go with you, Ira. I think it's going to be 31-20 49ers on a very, very sad, hot day for Bucks fans as they go to the bye week needing a must win coming out against the Giants. Todd Bowles' job will be on the line at the Meadowlands in that game, in my opinion, without a doubt.
It'll certainly ramp up the pressure, Lee, post-bye week. A win would do wonders, Lee, but I don't see it happening.
Let's hope we're wrong. Now, Ira, Bruce Arians did a Barstool Gambling podcast last week, which I think is kind of funny, considering he's still employed by the Buccaneers, that he's out there on a podcast where they're making picks and he's sitting there. But one thing he said, Ira, he was asked about quarterbacks, as always, asked about drafting quarterbacks. And he said this about rookie quarterbacks: putting them on the bench is a waste of time. Nobody develops with a clipboard. That was what Arians said very clearly. And I'm thinking, these are the people who drafted Kyle Trask in the second round. What exactly were they thinking? And why did you do that if you really don't believe in it? And I understand that Arians has had veteran quarterbacks, Jameis, Brady, Carson Palmer, and others. He really hasn't had a rookie guy since Andrew Luck. And of course, that guy is a historical figure in the NFL. What do you think of that when you hear Arians say that, when you know that they drafted Trask in the second round?
I see some of the teams today don't go along with that philosophy. Look at what's going on at Indy. Look what's happened in Charlotte. Young, developing quarterbacks taking a seat on the bench, Lee, for veterans. Not that the veterans are, Johnny Unitas over here. The guys are past their primes. But, they'll make less mistakes than the young ones. Lee, maybe it's a reflection of what's going on today where head coaches are feeling pressure to win and they don't have the time to develop a young quarterback. Sometimes honestly, sometimes. Now, Lee, with the Trask pick, they didn't pick Trask thinking that he was going to start in the near future. When he had his chance was, you know, after Brady left. Well, they didn't know they were going to get a Mayfield. And if they didn't get Mayfield, maybe they would have went with Trask. Lee, we'll never know. But I don't think there was any rush to get Trask in there at all. And it looks like he's going to be moving on. Lee, he won't be a Buck for much longer.
Oh, you think they're going to just let him walk or walk away from him?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, real quick about, you know, you were talking about rookie quarterbacks and sitting or whatever. It sure looked like it worked for Jordan Love. Now, Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson, I don't think they were so much benched because they were rookies. They were benched because they were terrible, and I think they were about ready to lose the entire team. You know, you got Anthony Richardson out there throwing for 40% completion percentage. That'd be bad in the 70s. Forget 2024. And, they were on the verge. You know, the Colts still have a player for a playoff. I think they were going to lose the locker room if they didn't bench him. With Bryce Young, who knows why that was? Who knows? Maybe it was Canales. Maybe it was David Tepper. I don't know. But with Indianapolis, Richardson was playing so bad, they couldn't justify putting him out there anymore and still pretend that they had a playoff spot.
Steve, I hope Arians keeps doing these podcasts because he always comes up with something that we can riff off on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's super impressed with Liam Cohen. He went out of his way to see – he wasn't asked about Cohen. He went out of his way to say – hey, I've never seen a first-year guy with a new offense come in and average 28, 29, 30 points a game. He's like, it's historic. It may just be, which is not going to be good for retaining him or good for Todd Bowles when there's that pressure if the offense continues. Bill Belichick, Ira, look, last one. He made comments on the Manning cast praising Jason Light. He was pretty in-depth with his praise. Great guy to work with, which was a hell of a thing for Belichick to say since he's looking to work with somebody. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, thinks it was very calculated. I'm not sure that it was, only because I was watching it, and it didn't feel as calculated as I thought it might be, but it might have been because they did have a picture of Light and Belichick together ready to put on the screen, and I'm guessing that they prepped Belichick on that, and he gave us a thumbs up. So what do you make of that, and do you think Belichick wants this job?
Belichick doesn't throw things out there that are not calculated. He thinks of them in advance. The fact they had that picture ready, it was not an impromptu remark by Belichick. It was well prepared. Lee, this is the time of year where you look for signals. You look for signals. They have a history together. He likes Mayfield. He likes this offense. I don't know if he could come in and keep Cohen or not keep Cohen, but I'll say this, Lee. Depending on what happens with the rest of the Bucs season, I think the Bucs are on the short list of teams that Belichick would be interested in, and I really believe that.
I agree with you, Ira, because I don't think he wants to be part of a full rebuild. A lot of these teams are looking for coaches. They have no quarterback, unless you call Derek Carr a quarterback. You know, Mayfield's proven with more than one franchise he can get a team to the playoffs. Belichick also is part of his quote-unquote calculated quotes, end quote. He likes the pieces that Light put together to sort of rebuild from winning a Super Bowl a few years ago. So apparently Belichick thinks there's a foundation of players to win with, especially Mayfield. So it sort of makes sense. You know, like you said, they've worked together. Belichick doesn't, I don't think he wants to go through a rebuild. You have much better sources than I do, Ira. And the division's not that strong. So it certainly appears, you know, Belichick wants that Shula record. The Bucs will give him an opportunity to get that record quicker than, let's say, going to New Orleans or Dallas.
Hey, Steve, in that regard, the Bucs check off the two most important boxes, quarterback and somebody that Belichick can work with in the front office. I don't think there's a lot of teams out there that can match that in that regard. Now, look.
Ira, I think there's three more boxes. Four more boxes.
Steve, and money, of course. Money. You might put that number one. But, Lee, if the Glazers decide to make a move at the end of the year, money's not going to stop them from getting the guy they want. It's not. They put too much of a premium on the head coach. That's a symbol of the team. That's the faith. That's the way, and they swoop in. And they become very active in the coaching search if they haven't already. But we would be remiss if we don't mention if the Bucs finish strong, and by that I mean get the 10 wins, make the playoffs, you know,
Bowles
isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Todd Bowles isn't going anywhere at that point.
This is true, Sage. I just want to throw those last boxes out of there, and we will get out. He needs 17 more wins to pass Don Shula. I think the other boxes would be he's a division that isn't very good. I think another box would be a strong offensive line. And Vita Vea is right in the mold of the Bill Belichick defense of guys that he's looked for before. I think he would just be drooling to build a new defense around that guy.
What was the defensive tackle he had in New England that was so good that he later went from
Vince
O'Brien? Yes, Will Fulk. That's what Steve's Wilfork. Talking yeah. about. That's exactly the kind of defensive tackle Belichick likes. Quick, on the Wayback Machine, about nose tackles Belichick likes, Jim Burt.
Oh, that's a great one, Lee. That's a great one for the Giants.
You doing any dancing tonight? Any fine dining? What are you doing?
It's limbo night, so I got to get under that bar, Steve.
All right, good luck. We'll send you some Advil.
All right.